If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56diva.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
Not a bad day or weekend, though, to be in the city, and I don't know what your plans are, but you might want to check out something that is playing at the Shakespeare Theater. In our studio right now, Jack Godfrey, musical theater composer, lyricist, and writer of 42 Balloons, the book, the music, the lyrics at the Chicago Shakespeare Theater. ChicagoShakes.com is where you get your tickets. Jack, welcome to Chicago.
Thank you very much for having me. It's great to be here.
Where are you from?
I'm originally from Oxford, which is about an hour away from London, but now I live in London.
Did you go to Oxford?
I did not. No, I kind of thought it's nice to get away from the place where you're from. So I went to university in somewhere called Durham. Actually, you have a Durham in America, don't you? Our Durham is kind of near to Scotland, so it's about 5 hours north of London.
You actually studied in a seminary school, right?
Well, I studied religious studies, but in the kind of just main university. So I didn't train to be a priest. It was kind of purely academic.
Really? Rather than professional. Who does that?
It's a great question. Well, my dad did it as well, so maybe you can blame him. I was kind of inspired, but yeah.
Were you also, though, thinking theater would be your track?
I think I always knew that music was what I really wanted to do, but I think it was a thing where I was like, I need some kind of plan B in case that kind of doesn't work out.
So yeah.
Religious studies, the obvious choice.
And they didn't have computer engineering at that school?
Well, they did, but that's not really my forte, to be totally honest.
I suppose, though, that's a good point. I tell junior broadcasters, if there's any of them left out there, don't study broadcasting. Study something that'll give you a sense of the world. Religious studies might be perfect for theater.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I don't know how kind of deep we want to get into this, but I think there are a lot of parallels with theater and you know, religious events in a lot of ways. It can be quite theatrical. I mean, I don't know. I grew up having, I think it really taught me a lot about really like opening my mind and really thinking about ritual and the way that the world is.
Well, I think any liberal art would do that. So
yeah, absolutely.
That seemed to have worked for you. But then why this story? And for those of you who don't know, 42 Balloons is the story of who?
So 42 Balloons is inspired by the true story of Larry Walters, Lawn Chair Larry, who in 1982 flew in a lawn chair with approximately 42 helium-filled weather balloons above L.A., and he did this because he had a dream of becoming a pilot, but he couldn't be a pilot of a plane because he had bad eyesight, so he wasn't allowed to fly planes. So he basically decided that he was going to make his own rules and build his own aircraft with the help of his girlfriend, Carol. And so the show basically tells the story of how this kind of unlikely group of heroes came together and made this dream come true.
So some of us know that story, some of us don't. I've paid attention to it over the years because I've just been fascinated by it. I know how the story ends, and I don't think it will be a spoiler alert for us to talk about that here too. But I never thought of that as a musical. So how did you discover it and why did this resonate so with you that you wanted to write about it?
Yeah, it's interesting. So I discovered this story about 8 years ago. Just online. I think I saw a YouTube video about it, and then I was reading on Wikipedia, just kind of general kind of information.
How old were you at that time then?
I was 24, so I'm 32 now.
Keep going.
And so basically, as soon as I saw this story, so I guess for context, I just moved to London, and I had this kind of dream of being a musical theatre writer. But I don't come from a kind of theatre family or anything like that. So I guess I had a lot of people in my life, you know, maybe doubting that a little bit. So as soon as I saw this story about a man who had a dream and had a lot of people saying that it was ridiculous or kind of questioning him, I really connected with that story in a lot of ways. I think the idea of, I think so many people, we have dreams that we might think are a bit silly or kind of foolish. So this story about a man who accomplished this thing against all the odds, and yet had a lot of people who were kind of questioning him and doubting him, I really kind of connected with that. And I thought there was so much scope for kind of really getting inside the head of this character, really like mining the kind of emotional arc of the story from the moment that he has this dream to the moment that he finally makes it come true. And then after that, when the kind of world responds to his dream in a way that he maybe didn't expect or hope for. I thought there's so many kind of fascinating beats of that story that really, you know, that's just they really lend themselves to great songs, I think, like great song opportunities.
So then you wrote the lyrics to the songs?
Yeah, I just started writing. And then the more that I learned about the story, the more that I really thought there was just so much other fascinating stuff to really mine into. So Larry's girlfriend, Carol...
Who is terrific in the show.
Right. And she, and in many ways, she's really the emotional heart of the story, I would say. I mean, so she basically put up all the money in order to buy all the equipment that they would need for the flight, which at the time came to $15,000. So she took out a loan to do that. And I thought that's such a fascinating part of this story as well. Why would somebody do that? And what is it about their relationship that made this happen? Because really, that's the reason why he was able to fly, I think.
The way you tell the story, she really loves him. She accepts him for this quirk of his desire to go up in a balloon. I think they were together for 10 years before it actually happened, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And finally, she acquiesces and then gives him the money and then is his partner in crime, if you will. There's true comedic relief with the role of her mother, who's like, honey, what are you doing? And in fact, she has some really funny lines. The show surprised me from the jump at how funny it was.
Yeah, I think it was really important to me that it's such a, I love stories that are true, but it's kind of so kind of strange. And there are so many details to the story that I kind of uncovered over time that they really, in my mind, lent themselves to a kind of silliness of tone.
And so what's the first song that you wrote?
The first song that I wrote for the show is actually, well, the first song that is still in the show is Helium, which is actually Carol's song after they break up. And she has this kind of emotional ballad.
Give me a couple of lines from it.
So it starts, Larry starts walking away, says he needs some air. The chorus goes, lifting him up is kind of the chorus. So I don't know, I think as soon as I discovered that there were these two people, they came together to make this crazy dream come true, and then their relationship ended, I was like, that is a musical in so many ways. And the kind of the heart of the story is their relationship. And Carol herself, I think, is really in many ways like a kind of audience surrogate. Like, we really fall in love with Larry and the dream through her eyes. And I just love writing a good kind of breakup ballad. So that was the first one that came to me, really.
So they're a couple, they go up. I'm trying to remember now, if you dwell on the fact that the relationship ends, his life ends, but I guess that would have been the ultimate end of their relationship. I had a question about that too.
Yeah.
I mean, the news stories tell the story of Larry, and when he did land, he couldn't handle the real world or was so put off by the comedy that people made out of his effort that he ended his own life. As the writer of that show, how did you deal with it? I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, sure. So I think that's something that also I really, really resonated with me as well. So just to be completely honest, my dad took his own life a couple of years ago, and he struggled with mental health problems for a long time in his life over the last kind of 10 years. So I think when I discovered this story and reading about that and reading about Larry, it was something that I obviously really emotionally resonated with. And I think it's, you know, it's a story which is uplifting in many ways. It's also a story that has its kind of tragic elements, as you were kind of saying earlier. And I think that it's really important. It was really important with me with this story. I wanted to write a show that I kind of really felt like it takes the audience on the whole arc of the story. And it's a story that is about so many facets of life, about the kind of like hope and about the kind of loss of hope and loss of innocence as well. But I think hopefully we kind of treat all those things in a sensitive way and in a kind of a way that you really resonate with every step of the journey.
Jack Godfrey is here in Chicago at WGN Radio's downtown studios. He is the composer, the lyricist, and the writer of the play at Shakespeare's Theater at Navy Pier, 42 Balloons, the number of balloons that Larry Walters went up in. The balloons leaked, and then he was able to descend. He was supposed to shoot them out with a gun.
Yep, a BB gun.
And drop the gun.
Yep, he did.
By the way, Jack, I did not know that your father also died by suicide. That must have just thunderstruck you when you saw the story that you loved and realized the parallels in your life, or you discovered the story before your father ended his life.
Yeah, and actually, so, I mean, he was still alive when I was developing the show and when we did our first kind of concert version of the show in London about 4 years ago. He was able to watch that and he loved the show. I mean, we did a kind of archive video recording of that performance and I sent it to my parents and he would watch it every day. So I remember coming home at Christmas and seeing him, and he had it up on his laptop watching it. So he loved the show so much. And in a way, I think it's obviously really emotional for me to watch the show now, kind of with everything that's gone on in my life. But I think it's also, it's nice for me that there's a kind of a legacy there, I think. And I always think about him when I watch the show now.
What do you want people to take from the show then? Because if it's hope and follow your dreams, I guess he did, but it wasn't satisfactory for him, was it?
Yeah, and I think that, you know, life is complicated, and it's that one of the messages of the show is if you've got a dream, then you chase it, like, no matter what. And I think it's really important for all of us to follow our dreams. I think another kind of element of the story is that it's important not to get too wrapped up in our dreams, and really, like, the most important things in our life are the personal connections that we have with the people who really care about us. And I think the kind of part of the message of the show, in a way, is maybe that Larry got too kind of wrapped up in his dream and he couldn't move on from that even after he'd completed his flight. And that, in a way, was maybe part of his downfall, as you know, as we kind of portray it in the show. So yeah, it's complicated, and I think that different people will take different things away from the show. I hope that they do. I'm a big believer in, you know, obviously there is some kind of message within the show, but my favorite part of going to the theater is the conversations that I have with my friends leaving the theater, and different people will resonate with different characters, different parts of the show. And I think it's always important to just present the audience with a story, and people will kind of make of it that what they will.
Two small parts that jumped out at me, I alluded to one, Carol's mother. She's so funny. Sort of like a small role that the king plays in Hamilton, but he just kills it when he's on the stage. When she walks on, you go, oh, this is going to be good. The other send-up that was just brief, but I thought resonated, was the David Letterman part.
Yes. Yeah, and that's really interesting to me as well, because obviously, being a Brit, I love American culture, and I think that was another kind of really real driving point of me wanting to write this show. So when I was a student, I spent a year in Boston at Boston College when I was 21, and I loved my time when I was there, and it really, like, started a real fascination with American culture, American TV, American film, American music, obviously. And so, yes, when we did the show in the UK, obviously David Letterman is much less well known in the UK. And I think that there's a kind of interesting distance there that I was so fascinated to see what people would make of.
But you did keep it as Letterman for the British
Absolutely.
Audience?
Yeah. And you know, there's a line that when he arrives and he says David Letterman was kind of a big deal, and the ensemble say, you can look him up after the show. And obviously in the UK, people will probably be like, oh, David Letterman, who's that? I'm going to look him up. But here, everybody knows who David Letterman is.
I thought the whole world knew who David Letterman was, and maybe they do, but they don't revere him the way we did here. David was a signal force in America for a very long time.
Yeah.
Less so now. But the fact that David just dismisses him and plays him for laughs really deflates Larry, doesn't it?
Yeah, and it's interesting. I mean, you can watch that interview. It's on YouTube now, and I've watched it many times. I find it a real, real fascinating moment, because I don't think that when Larry went on Letterman's show, I don't think that Letterman was kind of looking to make a fool out of him and put him down. I think he genuinely was fascinated by the story of this man who flew. And then when he comes on the air and Larry is so kind of adamant that he should be taken seriously, and that he repeatedly says, I knew what I was doing, I was in complete control of my craft, I think that he was kind of intrigued by that and perplexed by that, because it is kind of inherently a bit ridiculous.
Air drumming to that was the lyricist and the writer of the show, Jack Godfrey.
I can't help myself.
Evidently. So you don't do the choreography then, right?
I don't, as you could probably just see, for obvious reasons, no.
Nor should you.
Yeah.
But that's collaborative then, isn't it?
It is. I mean, I love that about the theater process. So Alex Sarmiento is our wonderful choreographer. And there's a real movement language to this show, as I'm sure you saw, where we have a kind of ensemble who are almost like a Greek chorus, but they also are kind of dancing throughout the whole show. And the music of the show, as you just heard, is very kind of energetic and poppy. And so we wanted to kind of have a movement language that was, like, very full on with the dancing and really give a visual spectacle to go with the story.
And then you didn't write the music either, just the lyrics?
I actually did, yeah. I did the music as well.
You did both?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's your story and your songs up there. A choreographer that says, well, let's stage it this way. Who is in charge of the visuals? Because there's some fairly hilarious graphics that, you know, aren't they're not trying too hard, but doggone it, they worked up on the screen and in the background. Were you in charge of that?
No, so that's the work of our video designer, Andre Goulding, who is an incredible video designer.
It's just interesting, all of these elements that come together.
It's amazing, honestly. And really, this is also testament to our director, Ellie Coote, who I've been working with on the show since I began, really, for 8 years. And she has put together this kind of vision of the how to tell the story visually. And that basically means bringing in Alex for the choreography, bringing in Andre for the video design, Bruno, our lighting designer, as well. So it's really an incredible team effort, and I definitely could not do any of those things.
So does this show then, has it appeared anywhere else in America?
No, this is our North American debut.
And it did play in England?
Yeah, we did our first run of the show last year in Manchester in the UK. Yeah.
So not in London, not in New York yet. Is that the goal?
Yes. I mean, I guess that, you know, we would absolutely love that.
I know
that.
That's a stupid question, but I mean, how does that happen then?
So, well, I guess in a way, this is, I guess, what you call an out-of-town tryout, and that's kind of what we did last year as well. I think that really the show is very much in development, and if, you know, anyone who's seen the show over the last week will have seen a different version of the show every night, because we're constantly changing sections, changing the visuals, cutting things, adding things. And so the process of being here, kind of like last year, is really an opportunity to put the show in front of an audience, to see what gets a reaction, what maybe needs to get more of a reaction, what's not quite landing, what's really landing.
How cognizant are you of the length of the show?
Yeah, that's definitely a factor, for sure. And I think it's one of those things where, like, you know, I will write a draft of the show and I'm like, this is perfect length, and then you put
4 hours
and you put it in front of an audience and you're like, everyone is falling asleep in this song, we need to cut half of the song.
So whatever. Are you doing that right now?
We have now finished, so I think you said you saw the show on Wednesday the show was officially locked, and we now can't make any more tech changes because our lighting and video design have now left. They've gone back to the UK. So the show is technically locked, as we say.
Okay, now. So I saw then the first final version of the show.
Yeah.
And you were happy with that.
Yeah, I was very happy. I mean, there's always more that I want to do. And I think this is such a thing in the previews process, which we've just been in, there's always more that you want to change. I mean, and I'm honestly still changing lyrics. I changed a line in the show last night because those things are quite easy to change.
Really? You come up to the actors and go, okay, instead of singing it that way, sing it this way?
Yeah. I'm like, what if we try this tonight? And then after the show, I'm like, how do you think that went? Should we try something else?
So, okay, but those are pros then, aren't they? Stupid question, but I mean, imagine that just before you go on, remembering the lines and then remembering to do it live the way you just said to do it.
Yeah, it's honestly testament to their ability. I mean, so Charlie, who you just heard, Charlie McCullough, who is one of the actors who did the show last year in Manchester. So basically our two lead actors, Charlie McCullough and Evelyn Hoskins, have come over with us from the UK to do the show. And they've been with us now for about 4 years working on the show.
Are there scouts then? Do people from London or Broadway come and watch it here in Chicago?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, our producers would know more about that than me. I don't really like to know who's in the audience.
Who are your producers?
So we've got a few producers. So Andy and Wendy Barnes are a husband and wife team based in the UK. Their company is Global Musicals, and they're the ones who really discovered us about six or seven years ago. And then they were joined by Alchemation, which is Kevin McCullum, who's a theatre producer over
him.
Here in the US.
So I think that's why Chris Jones said expect a kind of 80s upbeat vibe to it. Do you cop to that?
Absolutely, yeah. I think, yeah, I mean, I love big beats, as you could tell from my air drumming, you know, a few moments ago. I play a bit of drums myself, not particularly well, but songs have got to have beats, in my opinion. So, and I think we really wanted to give the show, make it feel a bit like a rock concert while
What's
telling
the song
story.
You want people to be humming when they walk out of the theater? And do you hate that question?
No, I definitely don't hate that question. I think that there are a few. I think the opening number of the show, which is kind of called Prologue, which is not a helpful name, but it's the one that goes, "What makes a man try to fly in a lawn chair?" That one is one that sticks in people's heads, seems to stick in people's heads. Helium, the one I was talking about earlier, the breakup ballad. Honestly, if they're humming any of it, I'm happy. I don't have a preference.
Well, the audience Wednesday night was happy. And and you said to me off the air that one of the ensemble members had friends there. But it wasn't a handful of friends that were cheering on somebody on the ensemble. That almost sold out audience was loving that show. I mean, you must have felt that.
Yeah, it's such a strange experience as the writer to sit in the audience and watch the show. It's very intense, and my girlfriend who was there for the first preview with me can attest to that, because it's a very intense experience to sit there and watch the show. And I feel like a kind of anxious parent watching a kid at a school play.
I would imagine. Well, you can say you saw it when it was in Chicago, if this thing goes on to greater things, and why wouldn't it? 42 Balloons is at the Shakespeare Theater, chicagoshakes.com. It's there until June 29th. And Jack Godfrey's in our studio. It's his show. Jack, thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much.